Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Maurizio Diaz.
Running for me is a spiritual vehicle. It's a way to live the best way I can. And I mean, I still live in a big city. I'm surrounded by the running world, which mostly revolves around that. Sometimes you forget. This piece of wisdom was like, man, hats off, like, that's it.
For our 50th episode of The Rundown, we reached for the stars and got to have an amazing conversation with Meb Kifleski. His story is one that could be turned into a movie script, as his family left the world of poverty and war in Eritrea and made their way to America. He knew that every opportunity was precious, and he did not squander the chance to do something great with his life. He worked his way up the ranks, earning a silver medal at the Olympics and winning the New York City and Boston marathons, but always remained grateful and humble throughout his journey. This episode is a little shorter than most, but make sure you listen to every word, because just like in running, Meb makes every moment count. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, I'd like to speak to you about a former guest on the show, Tommy Rivers Pusey. Since our last episode, he has been moved from Flagstaff to another hospital because he was in dire need of an ECMO machine. This particular machine will allow Tommy to get the oxygen he needs in order to continue his recovery. They also discovered that he has primary pulmonary NKT cell lymphoma. For those who don't know, it's an extremely rare and aggressive form of cancer. Please keep sending your thoughts and prayers to Tommy and the family. Donations are obviously appreciated, but if you can run for Rivs or share a story on how he impacted your life, that helps the family's morale too. I'll put the link in the show notes for anyone who's interested in learning more. Make sure to check the show notes for links to news and information on ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support. So please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. Welcome to the 50th episode of The Rundown. It's been a long ride. And for this episode, I really wanted to get someone special as a kind of celebration for this podcast and for running. He's gotten an Olympic medal. He's won the Boston Marathon and the New York City Marathon, actually the only marathoner in history to have done it. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show, Meb.
Thanks for having me, Justin. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on and making the time. How are things going for you where you are dealing with COVID? And, you know, is running still present in your life? And has that been a challenge for you?
You know, running is a beautiful thing. You know, it's a very, I used it for many years as a high schooler and to kind of get a good academics, and then eventually college scholarship, and then as a livelihood. But now it's a lot more mental. And I can see with the COVID-19, a lot more people walking, a lot of people more running outdoors. You know, you can't be cooped up around the house for so long. So it's a great way to stress relief, I guess you can say. So, you know, it's not, I'm glad I retired 2 years ago. So it's not like the demanding that I had about 100 to 130 miles a week where every stride counts. I'm more so now enjoying it for the health benefit, and I could run when I need to. But at the same time, you have to be cognitive of other people. So before I would meet up with group people, or you know, somebody said, "Hey, Meb, how you doing? How can I join you?" and things like that. But or give them high five and things like that. But now you got to do the social distancing of 6 feet or more. Or you see somebody coming, you just step to the street and let them go on the sidewalk, or vice versa. So it's a new normal, but at the same time, I am able, whenever I'm able to run, I feel better about myself and have a lot more productive day.
For sure. And do you think, like, having gone through the Olympic experience yourself, do you think, like, how do you sympathize with runners or, future Olympians now, and what that must be like to go through and having to delay it a year? Like, can you see how you might have handled a situation similar to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a hindrance if it's delayed or canceled within a month or so. But the Olympic has been delayed way early enough to do it. So I think it has advantages and disadvantages for the people that are older, like myself or my good friend Abdi Abdurrahman, who made the Olympic team in the marathon. You know, as you get older, your muscles slow down. And so another year in that regard can be not as helpful as somebody else who's coming, you know, for track and field or other sports who've been dealing with injuries. They can have full year to recover and be best at shape. And or some women who gave birth, they have one more year to be prepared for it versus 3 months, 5 months, or 8 months, or a year. So instead of a year, it would be 2 years. So in that regard, I think it can have an advantage, but the mental status can be difficult just because everybody's been thinking 2020, 2020, 2020, now it's 2021. So for that reason, I think it can be like, you know, you set your goal and not that can be accomplished immediately. And, you know, I think by the end of the day, you just got to pick right and you have to reset and reevaluate. And, you know, work from backwards. Set, you know, Tokyo 2021 in August and start working backward. Instead of that's how at least I approach my Olympic Games from the date of the race and then work backward to pick and choose the races that you want to participate or qualify for.
Nice. Yeah, that's really good advice to have. Can you take us back to the beginning, kind of where you're from and kind of what brought you to running, what brought you to America, because that's not where you're born. Can you walk us through that?
Absolutely, Justin. I was born in Eritrea in the Horn of Africa. Some of you might be aware where Red Sea is, and Ethiopia. Eritrea is top part of Ethiopia, touching the Red Sea coastline, and very great location to be. I was born there, and in the middle of the war of that was for independence against Ethiopia. That lasted for about 31 years. And, you know, my dad was wanted by the Ethiopian soldiers. So my mom and dad has to make a decision whether he's going to get prison or going to get killed or escape. And, you know, my dad did not want to leave, but my mom kind of encouraged him to take a chance because the alternative is not good to be prison or killed. So if you like, you know, he can go, but he has to walk over 225 miles to Sudan on his foot. It took him about 7 days. It's about a marathon a day, 30 miles a day or so. But you have to climb mountains. You got landmines on the way and scorpions, hyenas, snakes. So, and you have to mend in. So very difficult journey. But fortunately for us, he made it. But the challenge that he was facing was not just the distance, but how he's going to ever going to make it to safe land. And also, is he going to be able to see his wife and 5 kids born and the one on the way? So that was kind of keeping him motivated, but at the same time, kind of, am I making the right decision kind of mentality? But fortunately, he made it. And after about a year and a half in Sudan, he made his way to Italy. And from the age of 5 till I was 10 years old, I did not see my father or communicate with him, but, you know, there was no email, phone, or text, or whatnot. It was just my mom did have talked to him to do the proper paperwork to help us escape from the disaster war that we were facing, hunger, and other situations that come with war. So, but fortunately, you know, after 5 years of separation, with the help of I have a sister, half sister Ruth, and her mom, Leta Michael, helped him and his boss, Dr. Brindisi. You know, my dad was working very hard for him, and one day he asked, my dad asked Dr. Brindisi, his boss, I said, you know, Dr. Brindisi, can you do me a favor? He's like, yeah, what do you need? He's like, well, I need money to borrow to help escape my family. He said, how much do you need? And my dad said, I need 10 million lire, which in 1986, that was about $6,000. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Brindisi asked him, is that to save one person or to save everybody? And with the money that my dad has saved and the help of Leta Michael and Dr. Bridges had come back on Wednesday. That conversation was happening on Friday and came back on Wednesday. Dr. Brindisi gave him a 10 million lira cash. And he said, this is not a loan, it's a gift. And that helped save the whole family from, you know, poverty and war-torn zone to Italy. And I was the first one run into my dad in Athens, Greece, where eventually happened to be where I won the silver medal. But ran to my dad as soon as I got off the plane. You know, flying for the first time on the plane was scary for all of us. And my mom, especially, no language, having six kids to tow with. And I was scared. I was by the window, I believe. And I'm like, how I'm going to fall from the window? I didn't know all the safety things they have to do, protocols. But I'm just this little tiny window. Now I look back, I'm like, how was I scared of that? Now that I fly so much, I can't even get out of there if I want to, you know, so small. But when you see it for the first time and you are 10-year-old, it was a big deal. And as soon as I got off the plane, I ran into my dad and he says, gave him a hug. And he goes, Marhawi, which is my youngest brother, who is 4 years younger. And I said, no, it's not Marhawi, it's Meb, because bear in mind, he hasn't seen his kids for 5 years. Mm. And he expects us to be taller, muscular, or gain weight and things like that. So he went to tears. And my mom was there to tell him, hey, don't worry about their height and size. Just make sure all six of them are over here. Because for her, for the last 5 years, she was the husband, the wife, to make sure everything, especially in the third world country where you have to go plant crops, you have to chop the crops, you have to separate the haze from the seed and go crash the flowers. It's not like simply going to the store and get a milk or get a bread. So, and you got to take care of the cattle, so make sure they're fed. So it was a big burden, but she was such a relieving moment for her, the responsibility. And that's how our journey started. And then we moved in Italy for a year and a half. And we were played for fun with soccer. And, you know, they used to call me Pele was my nickname. For those of you who don't know, Pele is a great soccer mm-hmm. player from Brazil. So that was my nickname. And eventually that was, you know, and on October 21st, 1987, we came to the United States and to San Diego because my sister, half-sister Ruth, who was living in San Diego, and that's when we came. And our parents says, now this is the land of opportunity. Don't make sure you don't waste opportunities and utilize your energy and your gift to excel and be a positive contributor to society. Make sure you make us proud because, you know, we didn't have those opportunities. Your uncles don't have it. Your cousins don't have it. So don't waste it. And, you know, my dad woke us up at 4:30 in the morning before 7:30 o'clock class to learn English through the dictionary one word at a time. So it was a hard work that's pay off. And then, you know, I was lucky enough because, you know, bear in mind, I was 12 and a half. I was supposed to be in seventh grade, but they put me in sixth grade so I can have that middle school transition year. And, you know, and after that in seventh grade, you know, my oldest brother, who started ninth grade that year, 1987, got the most outstanding student trophy and for working hard. And he said, see, in America, hard work does pay off. And it wasn't just palm of my hand, the trophy that they gave him, but it was prominently displayed because it says Futsum Burhan Kafleski for most outstanding student at Roosevelt Junior High. And that gave hope to all of us. Hey, hard work does pay off. And then, you know, they were walking around. My brothers were runners also, and they were walking around with the Roosevelt Junior High Mud Club t-shirt, and I wanted to be one of them. And, you know, E class, you have to run and you get A or B. And the P teacher, Dick Lord, said, if you run hard, you're going to get A or B. If you mess around or goof around, you're going to get D. Or after the whole class, well, I want to make my parents proud and I want to get that A and a t-shirt. I ran as hard as I can. And it was a 6:15 to get the A and end up running a 5:20 mile. And he goes, you're going to go to the Olympics. Bear in mind, I grew up without electricity and no running water. I have no idea what the word Olympic meant. So he says, and he called the high school coach, Ed Ramos. He said, hey, Ramos, this kid is going to be really good. He's going to be better than the two older brothers, you know. And then I went to my dad that evening and asked him, what's the Olympics? And he said, why? He's like, well, the PE teacher said you're going to go into the Olympics. And what'd you do? I'm like, well, I ran 5:20 mile. He's like, tell the truth. I didn't think your oldest brother ran that fast. So that's how my running started. And when the PE teacher said, you're going to go to the Olympics, I just asked him, you know, I pointed to the shirt. T-shirt, A, that's all I could say because I don't know what Olympic meant.
You came over, you know, as an immigrant. My father, my parents came over from Italy, actually, oddly enough. when they were young. Did you have a hard time growing up in the States and being accepted because you weren't originally from there and you're an American citizen now and you race for the country, but was that a challenge growing up too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when, you know, luckily for me, you know, as I was only African when I was in Italy, so I was kind of in the middle of boarding school with the Italians. So I was kind of starting to assimilate there. And then when we came here, you know, it was very challenging. I mean, from stereotype and even to start, say, hey, you want to play football or something? Like, okay, let's play football. And they were thinking soccer, football, right? And they brought the American football. And it's like, what do you do with this thing? Because we haven't used it yet or never been known to us. But also, you know, color of your skin, and sometimes people say, you know, you don't speak much because you're not, here you are, you're not speaking, you're muted, then they think probably ignorance or stupid or whatever. So there was, it was a challenging time. But at the same time, my parents kind of encouraged us to surround yourself with good people, knowledgeable people who will help you go forward, not backward. And there were great family like this, Steve and Gail Van Camp, or Pat and Mike Anderson, who were our teammates, the parents of our teammates, help us be good contributors and kind of walked us through how you have to assimilate, how you have to work hard and surround yourself with good people. And they helped us kind of bridge that gap, I guess. But and it wasn't easy to say, and learning English. English is tough. It's a tough language. And but through hard work and perseverance, we made it happen.
Did your parents, you know, put any kind of emphasis on any particular part of your life when you got to the U.S.? Like, was it education? Was it sport? Was it, or was it just like work hard at whatever it is that you love? And, you know, because clearly you excelled in both academics and in running at the same time.
Justin, to be frank, my parents, all they emphasized was academia. He says education to kid alive. They didn't have those opportunities. And that's the reason we came to the United States from Italy, because there's a stepping stone, you know, we can go in Italy, might be, you know, leveled out the high school level, maybe fortunate enough go to college. But in the United States, you can go high school, adult school, community college, and then eventually to college or university and things like that. And you can go as high as you like. You know, obviously, that's not an easy task. And then you might face obstacles and on the route, you know, bumps in the road. But if is the system is there to be able to help you hopefully get to the highest level, there's no kind of press you down in terms of accolades. So how much you want to get to your master's, you want to go your PhD, is endless if you can have them manage the money or guidance or support. So no, my parents always emphasized, even at one point, you know, when I was a full scholarship at UCLA, my dad always was into sports. He likes to play soccer with us, hang out with us. And when we ran, he would cheer us on the sideline and running and to cross country, especially point to point, you know, going to some areas. But when I was in college, I was losing too much weight. And my mom was like, maybe you should just focus on your academics and let go this running thing and get a job that is going to be behind the desk. So, you know, I didn't know running was going to pay off. So for me, it was, you know, as much as, you know, I've been known for the win of the Boston Marathon and the New York City and Olympic, but the biggest, proudest moment for me, big, meaningful victory is a Boston victory. But on top of that, I think getting my UCLA degree was such a relief for me, because you read about athletes, especially African-Americans, unfortunately, you hear athletes who never graduate, or you hear they do the wrong things. And so that's the shoulder that you carry. You want to be a good example. And once I graduated from UCLA with communication and business in 1999, I gave running 100%. But before that, it was always a secondary.
Okay. So yeah, trying to keep the balance between the two. But like, I totally admire the fact that you went full throttle on your education. And like, I think I've seen a post recently where you actually have the tassels from your hat on in your car, which is kind of cool, because it's a reminder, you know, that those things are important. You know, like my parents are like, education is important amongst all other things, and you could still do a lot of things at different times too. So, and follow more than one passion. But the way you did it, I can definitely admire that. Can you talk about just like you know, you won that t-shirt when you were like 12. And then, so was that where the love of running started? I mean, as a kid, you hear the words Olympics, you have dreams, but those things change. Can you talk about like the evolution of yourself in running and maybe some early challenges that you faced?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, once I got that t-shirt and that kind of helped me with my self-esteem, I think, you know, Nelson Mandela's president from South Africa said, sports unites us more than anything else. And for me to be known as the seventh grade, the fastest kid in the school, and they get your picture in the gym. So they kind of people knew before I was, and then they start giving me high five or thumbs up and things like that. So it kind of brought me up from my shyness. I was a very timid person, and that kind of helped elevate. But then eventually just wanted to make a cross-country team. You know, I was fortunate enough to be on a team with my brothers on a cross-country team where we won the county CIF championships. And I was a freshman. My other brother, Akhlilu, was a sophomore, and my oldest brother was a senior. But it was a special moment to be able to win that first time for San Diego High School and be able to carry on that. And it's like, well, this kind of be cool. And then I played soccer until I was ninth grade. But in eighth grade, I fell in love with running. You know, I didn't have no guidance. I just trained myself. I would get up early in the morning and go for a run. And it was make a left turn or right turn. I was not a great neighborhood, but it was also a challenging hill. Do you want to go up the hill at the beginning of the run or at the end of the run? So those are the decisions. And I barely had a GPS watch. I just had a watch and then see if I could run faster every day. I don't know about intervals, tempos, or long runs. It's just like, okay, let me see if I could do likely to get injured. But having those hills there, it kind of helps you with their VO2 max or breathing, but not go all out. So that was a blessing, I guess, in hindsight. But I still, every time I go over there, that's how I started. Every time I go by Roosevelt Junior High, I always look to the right or the left, whichever direction I'm coming in. But that's where I started. And yeah, there has been challenges. I have to make a tough decision. I love soccer. It's still my passion. And I look back that I make the right decision sometimes because, you know, running is can be a very lonely sport. And loneliness, soccer is more of a team sport. But at the same time, in running, there is no favoritism. Whether you get first place, you get top 10, you get All American, or you finish in the 20th, there's no ambiguity about it. It is what it is. Whereas soccer, the coach can pull you out, can you pull you in, and you know you're not the right time, right place, and you know the scout cannot see you, so you can miss opportunities. But I decided to stick with running, and I think I've been very happy and very fortunate because I made the right decision. And you know, there have been challenges on the way. You know, I had numerous injuries. There have been other stereotypes that kind of got in the way. But at the same time, you know, I think I could control, you know, you can't blame anybody else if you don't accomplish your goals, whether it is sometimes you win, sometimes you don't, sometimes you get food poisoning and you finish 22nd, or sometimes you get lapped, but never give up hope. But you can say, hey, at least I'm making progress to the right direction, even though I'm not as competitive as the others are, but hopefully in due time I could get there. So you can make a small progress to ultimately be an Olympian or be a medalist. And so it's a stepping stone. You know, I was so excited to make my first Olympic team in Sydney, Australia in 2000, mm-hmm. you know, to wear that red, white, and blue. It's like, wow, that dream came true. And then, but before I left the stadium, even though I was disappointed with my 12th place finish, I had the flu, they had the prelim. But before I left the stadium, after running a personal best, I said, I want to win a medal for our country next time. I just don't want to be an Olympian. I want to win a medal for our country. So you have those goals, and to get that, at the Athens Olympics in 2004, it was another dream becoming a reality. So each of my four times that I've been to the Olympics has special meaning every time, even though sometimes maybe the experience, second time, getting the medal for our country, see the country that gave you an opportunity, the flag is kind of risen because in your honor, man, that was an amazing moment. And, you know, and then you have, you know, not go to the Olympic in 2008, it was big setback. I mean, I was hoping, you know, been second at Olympic Games, second in New York, third in New York, third in Boston. You're like, I'm ready for that win. And hopefully it will be at the USA National Championship or Olympic Trials in 2007 of November for the 2008. you're looking so much, you worked so hard, and you did everything in your power that you can. Sometimes you didn't even finish a race because you don't want to mess it up for the trials. And guess what? You know, you get Pervis Schrecher, and your good friend Ryan Shea passes away of a cardiac arrest. So mentally, physically, emotionally, you were hoping to win another medal for your country, maybe even a gold, mm-hmm. but you're not going to the Olympics. So how do you get back from that? It was a heart-touching moment, but somehow, some way, it kind of puts life in perspective versus the Olympic when you know, Ryan Shea, who was sitting next to me to the starting line on the bus, was next to you. Mm-hmm. He's no longer with us. That kind of was like, oh, well, you know what? The Olympics aren't a big deal after all, you know? So you have to have those moments, real, real moments to kind of appreciate you and what life it is, but also grateful that when you go to the Olympics or when you go for another run, don't take things for granted.
Yeah, for sure. And like, how did you get through that moment? Because I mean, that's got to be devastating to be that close. You know, he was a training partner and, you know, you got injured too. So like, what are some ways that you got through that mentally?
You know, I mean, is, you know, Ryan and I were good friends, and he was always a protector for me. If somebody said negative about me, man, he stood up for me online or whatever. He was, in terms of running brotherhood, he was a steel for me. He was a rock, you know, and because he knew me, he knew what my passion was. He knew what I stand for. I knew how grateful I am to the United States and with all my heart. And I gave everything that I can. And when somebody criticized me, not American enough, or well, maybe it's this and that, he stood up for me. So I have a lot of respect for him. And, you know, and when I was training, you know, obviously in San Diego and in Mammoth. And in fact, when I went to Athens, he gave me a picture of him and I training together, and you know, got to show the world what you're made of. You know, I believe in you and things like that. So it was those moments that keeps you, hey, you know, sometimes when you're running the New York City Marathon, you know, it was the U.S. Championship in 2009 that I'm talking about now. You know, it's the U.S. Championship and the international field. And sometimes I want to do so bad for myself, but I also want to do so bad for Ryan, or I want to do so bad for United States. And the other championship might mean for Eritrea. Or sometimes I say, I want to do it for San Diego, but I'm also training a Mammoth. I want to do it for Mammoth. So you think of those things and, you know, you persevere, I guess, you know, and don't take things for granted. And yeah, I mean, did I consider retirement after all that situation happened? Because it's a pretty scary moment to mm-hmm. all of us are runners, and to have a cardiac arrest at 28 or whatever age, or 27 age that he was, is not taken lightly. So you kind of put in perspective, but you also want to honor them in the best way you can, whether it's an interview or talking to his Stephen Shea, his brother, and things like that. You know, you want to remember his legacy at the same time, because you know, we humans, we make mistakes, we fall, but if we can learn from our mistakes and get up, and I remember just saying, "Hell, well, I'm not going to Beijing," because that puts in perspective for me. And my good friend passed on away, but it says, you know what, I can't give up. I got to work harder. So you rededicate yourself again. And every time I go to Central Park, I when that area comes, I do the cross, the Father, the Son, the Holy mm-hmm. Spirit, and think about him every time. Not only when I'm racing, but even when I was winning, I did that. But when I go for a run, when I go in that area, I do it again. So just remember him all the time.
Yeah, it goes beyond, you know, the runner, the athlete. It's the person too, you know. And that's, I think so many times we do forget that at times, but yeah, it's gotta be a challenge, and it can happen to anybody. Like you said, and life is really so precious. I wanted to ask you about, I'm reading a book called Running to the Edge. It's about Coach Bob Larson. And I'm at the point in the book where he discovers you. So, can you just kind of run me through that? And, you know, I know in the book they describe you of the, you know, the kid with the engine and the kick, and it was quite exciting because I knew this interview might be coming up. So can you talk about that relationship and how he might have taken you to the next level, or made you believe that you were even better than you actually thought you were?
You know, I mean, for me, more other people believe more so than I believe in myself. You know, when I was in high school and at the yearbook, people would say, "Hey, we're going to see you." I think I was the all around person, you know, in the yearbook, because I knew about my athletics, but I want people to know that I hope to be a good person overall. So they say, hey, we'll see you at the Olympic. We'll see you on TV. Don't forget the small people. Here you go to UCLA. They always says, hey, you can write your own ticket. You know, it's hardly they ever say that people, you know, you can go whatever you want. And I didn't know about scholarship and things like that, but I worked hard in academics as I did in athletics, you know, and but academics always came, and I was on the quiz team, and I can do math, even though I didn't know the SAT words and stuff. But, you know, I can, and, you know, math was easier for me. And, you know, but it was fun to be in a team environment of academia. And it was fun. And then going to UCLA when Coach Larson recruited me, and I knew about UCLA. I mean, I think through football and basketball and baseball, when I was at, I watched it on TV, I said, I want to go there. And at the time, it was the best academics and athletic school, university at the time. And they didn't have much distance runners. But he took a risk on me, I guess. But at the same time, I went there for the academic, and make sure I get my diploma from UCLA. Once I do that, I could give this running thing. But it was not a priority. And Coach Larson, been from San Diego, people always say, hey, he's going to put his arm around your shoulder and he's going to take care of you. But I was not into running that much in terms of who is Coach Larson or who, you know, Arkansas was hot then and things like that. Or, but, you know, you think about Stanford or when you get a call from Harvard and you think about this, but, you know, you also have to make a decision that is best for you. And when they came with scholarship for 5 years, you know, him and Eric, Coach Eric Peterson and Coach Larson came to the house and met my family. And I have to make a quick decision within a week whether I'm going to take that full scholarship or not, because otherwise I'm going to go to another thrower who they were recruiting. So Dale Van Camp, who was my mentor, and Dr. Steve Van Camp, they took me there and wrote the pros and cons. And but if I'm going to get 5 year scholarship, and instead of going to boarding school for a year before I go to the, Harvard or Princeton and things like that, I need to go to UCLA. And 5 year came, and I decided, well, let me see what this thing is about. But Coach Larson knew who I was and understood. He asked me what have I done, because he knew how successful I was in high school. And we're going to change a little bit here. We're going to increase the mileage, and I'm going to work with you. And, you know, but, you know, he has been a father figure or role model, and not just as a running advisor, but all around life advisor. So he's running in the edge of his book. It does a lot about who he is. And I'm just grateful to have gone to UCLA and meet him and be able to accomplish slowly. You know, I remember when I was a freshman, he says, hey, don't stress out. Don't put pressure on yourself. The sophomores, the juniors and the seniors have more pressure on you. You're going to get there, but when you're junior or senior, but right now just go chase those people, you know. And he made it fun in a way that, oh, I got to win as a freshman, even though I had a lot of pressure when I was at the NCAA my freshman year in Knoxville, Tennessee, I believe. I have to win the whole race to be able to, for UCLA to win. And that was a lot of pressure, which I did. And unfortunately, I would end up getting fifth place. But even the following year, I had that same thing. Arkansas had two other guys, or maybe three sometimes, and I was the only one. I got to win it, and they got to finish like fourth and sixth and seventh. You know, which wasn't fair, but at the same time, you do the best you can. And the closest we all got in second place as a team, but you know, Otto Bolden, who was a great 100-meter runner, and John Gardena, who was a great shot putter and discus thrower, you know, multiple double, like I won 5K, 10K, but we were just different era. But we were teammates at one point, but I was a freshman, someone was a senior, and then the other was a junior, didn't work out, but it was fun to be able to be on the UCLA team.
Amazing. So yeah, just like fast forward, like you stuck with Bob Larson, then he stuck with you right out of school. And when did you guys decide that you were going to become a marathon runner? Because obviously it led to some pretty amazing things, and you ended up being one of his best runners, I think, and most accomplished of all time. So what did that conversation look like?
You know, I think, you know, for me, Coach Larson and others, you know, even Ron Tabb, or who was helping me on the side when I was in high school, and then also Mike Anderson, who was a parent of one of her teammates in high school. He goes, you're going to be a beautiful marathoner. I'm like, how far is that? And they're like, 26.2 miles. I'm like, nope, I'm okay. I'm a miler. So I really played it the distance for as long as I can to the mile, even in 1500 meter in college, and then 5K, 10K. But then I was happy to be an Olympian. 2000, 2001, I broke the American record in the 10K. 2002 was an off year, no Olympics, no world championship. I said, well, let me see what I can do, this marathon thing. And 2002, I did New York City Marathon, and I was nervous, and I didn't think I was going to keep up 5-minute pace for 26.2 miles. I even asked Dina Kasser, who was my training partner, how am I going to do this? But, you know, we gave it a shot, and then I got excited at First Avenue in New York with the crowd, and mile 16, I'm in the lead and having a great time, and then I hit the wall, and I started going slower and slower and slower, and I ended up getting, you know, I got it down 4 people. I thought, worst scenario, I got 4th place, best scenario, I still can win it, and end up getting 9th place around 2:12:35. The A standard for the Olympic for the 2004 was sub 2:12. So I missed it by 35 seconds. It was And I just said, you mean I got to run 26.2 miles over 2 hours to get 35 seconds? That doesn't make sense. This is the worst event ever. I never won a marathon. And I remember Coach Larson was there. It's like, oh, I heard this before, you know. I just give him time. I will remind him how he was in the lead at mile 16, 17 to mile 19. And I went back to Eritrea where I grew up, where I was born, and came after 2 weeks, 6 weeks there, and came back how people living there in third world country, you got to go collect wood so you can have fire. You got to go to the well to get water. You got to go about 1.5-2 miles away. So I put a life in perspective. I said, you know what? I said, I never do another marathon, but nobody forced me. I'm excited to do Boston. Put me in Boston. He says, no. Boston is hardcore, so we need to put you in Chicago eventually, flat course. And that's what I did. And I ended up running 2:10:03. So I improved over 2.5 minutes. And he says, well, now that was fun. You know, I even went for a cool down because I didn't hit the wall. So I was just running for time versus for a win. And since I ran 2:10:03, then decided, okay, this can be fun. And then decided to go to the marathon. And I was still doing till 2009 for 7 years. I was doing the 10K marathon, 10K marathon. But then I made a switch thanks to my wife, Yordanis, actually. She's like, you know, I was trying to break 27 minutes. I know 27:13 was my PR in the 10K, the American record, but I was trying to break 27 minutes. But she's like, well, you're already American record holder. Why do you need to break that? You're not going to improve your profile by doing that. So just stick to the marathon. You should do the marathon. And then that's when I won the New York City Marathon.
Incredible. What's some advice you can give when you are going to hit the wall? What are some things that you say to yourself to kind of work through those moments?
Yeah, I think that, you know, in the marathon is about patience. I think, you know, running is a beautiful thing because if you feel great, you can pick it up. And in a marathon, you're going to hit a wall, but you'd rather hit them wall a mile 23 or 24 and kind of tough it out the last 2 miles or the last 5K. But, you know, the beauty of running is you can slow down a little bit. You know, you can engage, oh, I'm going out too fast. I need to pace. I'm mile 18. I still got 8 miles to go. I can't keep that pace out. So let me just slow down a little bit. And maybe you go through the good patches and bad patches and collect yourself and try to avoid that hitting that wall. And that's what I would do. And you know, don't make drastic sprints. It's like, oh, feel great, I'm going to go hard. No, don't do that, because 2 miles later, 3 miles later, is a different beast, and you don't want to be there.
For sure. So yeah, you mentioned the win in New York City, 2009. Then you know, like there's gaps between your wins. You know, the Olympics and then New York and then, you know, Boston, which is, you know, Bob told you is one of the toughest courses around. Which one was most memorable for you? Like, I know the win in Boston was the year after the bombing. I'm sure their emotions were running high. You know, the 2009 New York City Marathon was a year after you lost a good friend. So, you know, what can you say about those races and what was the most memorable one for you, in your opinion?
Well, the easy answer is the most memorable one is the Boston Marathon. But I am definitely excited and fortunate to have those choices, because each service magnitude of my career, whether it is to be an Olympian in 2000 at the Sydney, Australia, that was the highlight for me. And then 2001, breaking the American record was huge. And, you know, at the U.S. level, and then to win the silver medal in Athens, where I met my dad for the first time, I got on the flight to after 5 years of separation. It was monumental for me, you know, and the world knew who I was, and to be able to represent your country who gave you opportunities and your flag is displayed at the Olympics is, I mean, I still have to pinch myself sometimes, but my career got better and better as the year went on. And, to hopefully win another gold or win a gold or another medal in 2008, that was the dream that I was waiting for. And, you know, things were going in the right direction by getting second in Boston, or I mean, second in New York, third in New York, third in Boston. You're like, I'm due for another medal, but you don't always get your dress or what you think you deserve. And not to lose a friend and not to go to the Olympics, it was a devastating time. But before I left the hotel in New York City Marathon where the trials were, my wife and I prayed, if this what God calls for, this is it, I'm okay with it. I'm happy with the silver medal. I'm happy with the American record. If that's where my career is going to end, I'm completely okay with it. But I knew internally that what I was doing in training would not come out in that year of the Olympic trials in 2008. So there was something internally that I said, you know what? I know there's more. So never, I guess I had faith and I never lost hope, even though sometimes I contemplate of retiring because, you know, sponsor reasons and other things that's going on. And before I left this, you know, before I left, I, you know, not jokingly, but I said, I guess I can go to Beijing. So my Olympics will be the New York City Marathon. I cannot wait another 4 years to make that dream come true. I said, New York City Marathon will be my Olympics, my personal gratifying moment. And to be able to win that biggest marathon in the world, my first marathon, what I did, where I learned my PhD. And after all the trial and tribulations of ups and downs of New York experiences, and to wear that USA jersey and with my, on my chest and come to Central Park, beating the silver medalist from the Beijing Olympics and to beat the Robert Cheria from four-time Boston champion. It was a stacked field. There was a 203 guy in the field. I mean, to be able to win it and point out the USA jersey, I mean, that's my ultimate dream, but never give up hope. And then that's 5 years after I won the silver medal. And then taking another level, you know, I went to the Olympics. I didn't have a sponsor for 8 months after 2011 of January till August, and nobody wanted to sponsor me. I was too old, or for whatever reason you want to call it. I was, you know, crazy. Think about it. You win New York, you win a silver medal for your country. The first time in 27 years for New York, and first time in 28 years for the Olympics. You've done some humongous things, and you don't even have a shoe sponsor. Come on now. But right. I really went back to my roots, and I remember, what is my gift? And I remember just running Highway 395 by Mammoth Lakes, California, by the airport. I said, would you do it even if you didn't get paid for it? I said, absolutely. I just go look back, my God-given talent in the 7th grade P class. I said, you know what? I will still do it nevertheless if I get paid or not get paid. So I went 8 months without getting paid, and you know what? Skechers came to the plate after Nike did not renew my contract, and I worked with them hand in hand. I told them I could run a personal best in the marathon and then the half marathon. 5K, 10K days are behind me. I can't guarantee you that, but I can give you more PRs in the half marathon and the marathon. And, you know, I worked hand in hand with them to help them design the shoes, to give them feedback. And amazingly, I won the trials. I ran a PR in New York City Marathon, and you know, go to London Olympics, and what I thought I was going to drop out at halfway point because I was struggling. I was signed up for New York City Marathon, so my goal was to win top a medal or top 10, and none of them was going to happen that day. I was 21st place at 13.1 miles. I'm like, oh, people often ask me, do you enjoy the scenery where you run? I said, no, because I'm thinking about my competitor. But at that point, I was ready to throw the towel. But then I said, you know what? How many people would love to be in my shoes right now to represent our country at the Olympic Games? A lot. So get to that finish line. No matter how many people pass you, your daughters are waiting there for you, and your family is waiting, your mom and dad, your brothers and sisters. Get to that finish line, no matter how many people pass you. But amazingly, when you think positive and persevere, I end up getting fourth place. You know, I didn't know who was in the lead. I said I was in sixth place with when I saw Coach Larson. He gave me six fingers. I was running next to the Japanese guy. I said, I don't know who's there. If one of them get busted with drugs, I want to be the one moving up to that bronze medal. So I ended up getting amazingly fourth place. That was my motivation. And that allowed me to be invited to the Boston Marathon and to be able to go the Boston Marathon in 2013. I was there as a spectator, just like the three lives that were lost. I left 5-8 minutes before the bombing happened because I had an appointment, but I was there for the whole race. I was there for 4+ hours, and you know, the disaster occurred and the bombing happened. And I remember Bonnie Ford from ESPN.com asked me, are you scared to participate? Are you going to bring your family? Would you come back again? I said, I have to come back. And I just hope to be healthy enough to win it for the people. So I met that goal. And on April 21st, 2014, you know, I was 2 weeks shy of my 39th birthday. I was the 15th fastest guy in the field. I had less than 1% chance to win, according to experts. But you can never, I wrote the victim's name the night before on my bib to draw inspiration. It was the slogan of Boston Strong. I'm going to give a map strong. Whatever happens, it's my last Boston Marathon. I'm ready to live with the consequences. And guess what? And miracle happened. And I'm grateful to God for giving me, not that you want the bombing to happen or the disaster to occur, but somehow, some way, God chose me to be that day. And I remember tweeting, say, we are all under the same umbrella, the 36,000 people who are participating for this to do something positive, to own the streets of Boston on Boylston Street. And I was just a fortunate one to be able to lead everybody to that, to come to the finish line. And still, you know, I never broke 2:09. I ran like 8-9 times 2:09, and it changed by a second. But that day, that's still my best time ever. And not only did I win the race, but I ran a personal best and became the first American to win in 31 years. So it is the most meaningful, my purpose on earth to be a runner. That's how I'm going to be known for.
It's incredible. And I got chills throughout that whole story that you just told me. And it's just like seeing that moment happen and like how special that moment was for you and for the people of Boston and everything. It's truly incredible. What can you attribute to your success as you got older? Because, you know, you just kept getting better and better and better. Like, technically you should be still racing because you know, your best times were ahead of you, but I'm just kidding. But you know what I mean? What can you attribute to that?
I mean, definitely, I would think my background, my childhood plays a big role. I don't take things lightly. I'm too serious of a person, unfortunately. That's good and bad. Very focused, very determined. But at the same time, I am fortunate to seize the moments and use people to help me be the best that I can. I might run the races, but there's a lot of people behind the scene who are gracious enough to help me be who I am. And, you know, from my wife, whether it's cooking or being with the kids so I can take a nap or help me out, whatever, so I can get my therapy or go to training camp, or from my brother, Howie, who handles all my business affairs, and Coach Larson, you know, through the ups and downs, have been a mentor and been there for me every step of the way, but also paying attention to small details. You know, for me, the drills, the stretching, the strengthening, the diet, the crash training, all those things that I talk about after I won the Boston Marathon in the book Met for Mortals, is what I lived for. I mean, every second counted, every stride counted, every ice bath that I did, I didn't enjoy it, but I did it. And the reason I won the Boston Marathon is, even though, you know, you never do this in any marathon, you never take the lead at mile 5 and hold it off. 99.9% of the time people get caught. But I pay attention to details and all the small things sometimes that you do. And like, what am I doing it for? You question it. It came in handy. My form never broke down. And paying attention to do that. You know, your form is trying to break down, but you shake your hands and stay upright, chest right, chin up, and all those things that help you not break up and, you know, be a smarter racer. And once you are a smart racer, hopefully, you know, you can outsmart the other people. And I was just fortunate enough to be able to do that on the Boston Marathon. And yeah, I mean, that's to be close to 39 and run a PR. You know, I never ran my PRs that I thought I would, because sometimes the weather gets in the way, get food poisoning, and, you know, so many out of your control. But when it clicks, when the reality and the dream meets, amazing things can happen, and it happened for me in the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, incredible. And I enjoyed, you know, the fact that you're also part of Skechers too. I'm honored to say that I'm actually on the team as well. So I'm a sponsored athlete with them. So I share that with you. And it's nice to, I think when they say, you know, you should run in the shoes, that's for you. Like, you actually helped to create those shoes. Was that a pretty cool experience for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Skechers kind of gave me the resurgence of my second career. Like you said, I still maybe should run. Sometimes you wonder that, but I mean, they propelled me forward. I think the company in itself kind of embraced what I have done, but at the same time, they believed in me. It was more of a partnership instead of a sponsorship. So they gave I gave them my feedback, and they also responded to how we can collaborate to be the best that we can. And I'm just, you know, in 2012, I was the only Olympic trial qualifier for Skechers. Talk about pressure. But in 2016, I think we had like 53 or more people there. So, you know, I'm just proud to be able to be partnering with them. And, you know, they're amazing company and amazing shoes. And I know people say Skechers, but put them on. I know when next time you are in the market for a pair of shoes, put them on and try them, and you'd be amazed how good they are.
What's the greatest piece of advice, running advice you've ever been given?
The greatest advice I ever given was, I mean, there've been many advices, but I think from an elite athlete was, Paul Turga from Kenya. I'm glad I met him in my early career. I think I met him in 98, right after I went to Europe, to run a 10K, and I asked him, hey, you know, I'd love to be like you one day. And he says, yeah, let's go. He put me around his shoulder and let's go for at the hotel lobby. Let's go for a tea and go for a tea. And he says, well, Meb, he goes, I could give you my secrets, my workouts, but where you are, where I am, are on two different pages. You can maybe last for a week or 2 weeks, but you're going to be broken down. But what you want to do is make a small progress for the long-term gain. And eventually you'll get there. So don't rush it. Make progress and don't overdo it, because some people get excited, they overdo it, and you get injured and you may never recover from it. So the small progress is the best advice he gave me, and eventually he's the guy that I competed against. And you know, he was a favorite to win in the Athens Olympics, but he was a 5-minute PR than I did, and eventually I had to beat him to get that one of the medals.
Incredible. Yeah, it's good advice for us too. You know, like, take your time and gradually build up. Do you have any mantras that you live by, Meb?
Some of the mantra I use is run to win. It doesn't mean getting first place, but getting the best out of yourself. Each time and every time you got to push, you know, whether you're having a great day or a bad day, get through it. You're going to give so much about yourself and resilience to say, hey, I was struggling today, but I came in within a minute of my PR or 2 minutes of my PR. Whereas if you just throw the towel, you might not be able to know where you would have been. Say, hey, on my worst day, I was 2 minutes behind or 3 minutes behind. If I could get a ride on a marathon, I could go another 4 or 5 minutes and PR. So that's what I usually say. And be in the moment. I think, you know, whether it's somebody in front of you or running, say, hey, I want to catch that person by the next mile. I want to be with that group by the next mile. I'm going to work on my form. So keep talking. Self-talk is important.
Yeah. I met you in New York for a little shakeout that we had before the marathon, and you signed my hat to Justin, best wishes, run to win. So that's entirely accurate. And it definitely helped me during the marathon, and the advice that you gave me was awesome. I ran my best major there. So for that, I'm forever grateful. Beb, my last question to you, what does running mean to you?
Ooh, Justin, that's a easy question, but a full load question at the same time. Running is life. It's a lifestyle. I mean, for me, I didn't realize it, but it gave me hope. It gave me to get out of your shell, a confidant. You know, we're better than we think are when we run. You know, you think better when you're out on a run, or the friendship, the camaraderie that you make. So running means the world to me. I mean, if it wasn't for the running, for me, every person that I have met, I don't know what I would be with them. And there's a lot of great people in the world that I have met through running. So it's the life that it gives. Yes, you get out of it what you put in it. But in the journey of running, the people you meet, mostly 99.9 good people, solid people, caring people, and who understand what you're going through. So I am always envious. If I don't get my run in and I see somebody else run, I'm like, I'm proud of them, but I critique them on their mechanic. But at the same time, like, I'm so proud of you going out there and getting for a run. So it's a lifestyle, it's a journey, and it gives you hope and persevere. And it gives you goal for not just for today, but also for tomorrow, but also for the next, for the future. So you'd be able to see the nature itself, especially being a distance runner, whether you run 1 mile or 5K, 10K, half marathon, full marathon. In that journey, you're going to learn so much about yourself, and it gives you a strength to be the best that you can.
Well, Meb, I really, that's, you know, great advice from an incredible athlete. And I think from an even better person. You know, you're never sure when you meet, you know, people of your stature and with all the accomplishments and all the medals that you've won and the championships. And it's amazing that we've reached a point in this podcast where I can have a champion like yourself on the show. But you're so humble and so kind, and I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Justin. It was a pleasure to meet you in New York. And it's not always you put the face and the name together, but thanks for the reminder of the autographs and be able to just share it on this journey together, Lee Rundown, and be able to share our stories, our, you know, journey to help others. And, you know, we are all champions in our own way. And that's what the run to win is. You know, we all have different unique gifts. And as long as we inspire others to be the best they can, not only just in racing, but a humankind, to be the surround ourselves with well-being people who are able to help you in certain ways. And running is not just about running, but the thing that helps you be the best you can. It brings the best of humanity, and that's what I love about running.
Thank you so much, Meb.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by the WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. But seeing as we can't do that in person right now, let's try our best to stay connected through social media. How can you do that? Every Monday, we'll connect through a virtual run. You can go out there at any time of the day and run any distance you choose. When you get home, share your run with us on Instagram by tagging at WRGRuns. And we'll post it in our stories for everyone to see. It's a tough time for everyone. So hopefully this helps us stay motivated to get out there and keep moving. If you want to learn more, visit our website, imarunner.ca, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Hope to see you all soon. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.